Well, good evening and good morning, EPL State of Mind listeners. From shoulder barges, stunning strikes, shithousery, and sending offs, this Premier League match week number 5 had it all on display. Of course, we will review the heated affair at the Empty Had, but also prepare yourselves to finally hear something positive about the Toffees over at Everton. Another first minute bee sting and tons of other excitement to look forward to today. So get ready to delve into the EPL State of Mind with your hosts, James, Sean, and Kyle. We will also be contacting the Guinness Book of World Records, as I will probably be breaking the record for the use of the word absurd in one singular podcast. Roughly 45 minutes of just absurd in a loop, and the rest 15 will be about games and other interactions. So welcome aboard, everybody. Sean, how are you feeling? We'll start with you, because you probably feel the best out of everybody.
Yeah, very nice weekend. It's really nice, both from both footballs, right? NFL and also Premier League, when your team wins early and you just sit back and watch the chaos unfold on a Sunday, you just sit back like, oh, I already got my W in the bag. So I'm happy, man. I'm cheery.
Yep. That's all you can really hope for, is for your team to do well. We've always had a discussion what hate watching is. It's obviously, I think, too early to hate watch unless you're watching Manchester City. And I think that will happen more often for a lot more people. But it is a lot more fun to just root for your team to do well and see how everything else. And when you get thrown a bone, you're even happier. So when the Jets throw you a double bone at the end of the weekend as well, I'm sure you're stoked. Kyle, I'm sure you're disappointed, not only because the Giants have showed flashes of success, but because of what happened over the weekend with the English Premier League. No?
I mean, Malik Nabers, I wish he could come to Man City. Dude's the real deal.
Well, you probably could buy him.
Well, we might need to, because you'll hear later, but we got some holes in the city now and some more that are going to appear in the coming weeks. But yeah, doing all right. This was a tough week for City. This was brutal. So other than that, it's great. Everything was great in the Premier League. A lot of fun goals, a lot of fun matches this week. A lot of draws.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it should be another fun pod. Should be another fun week for the Premier League and the State of Mind.
Yeah, that's it. Well, before we get started, a little congratulations to Shawnee Boy. He's sitting in a new studio as we speak. Him and his wonderful, I was about to say fiance, but I was at the wedding. So wife, Grace, had finally moved into their new cottage. So Sean, congratulations, man. That's big news. I know everyone cares about what our personal lives are, because that's what they listen to this for.
Yeah, let's keep it moving.
Of course. But why don't you go ahead and start off in your new studio and bring some Everton fans some cheer and some joy.
Yeah, something positive to talk about for once. The Friedkin Group has officially announced their takeover of 94.1% of the stakes in Everton Football Club from Farhad Moshiri. This is something that's been kind of rumored for a while. The two sides reached a deal in June, but then it was called off because of disagreements about handling of Everton's debt. They've come back together in recent weeks to hammer out a deal. It was kind of a foregone conclusion in some ways, because they did loan Everton $200 million to pay off some of that outstanding debt. But to give you kind of an idea about this new ownership group, they also do own AS Roma in Serie A. They also have experience in manufacturing Toyotas. That's where they make most of their money. They're worth about $6.1 billion, so certainly cash is not at a premium for them. But they said they're focused on bringing stability to the club, and they're very excited about completing the new Everton Stadium at Bramley Moor Dock in downtown Liverpool. Obviously, we know how poorly run they've been in the last two seasons, or recent seasons, rather, with 2 point deductions. But I would recommend going back to the Toffee Time episode with Blake, just to kind of get a whole picture of how incompetent Farhad Moshiri has been as the Everton owner. But speaking of incompetence, it dovetails nicely with our weekend roundup, the next segment. We started off with Brighton v Nottingham Forest at the Amex. Very, very exciting and heated match. Not quite as heated as the match we're going to get to in a few moments, but this game was quite fiery. A 2-2 draw in the end. It's open scoring with Chris Wood taking a very nice pen into the corner after a foul by Carlos Baleba on Hudson-Odoi. And then a classic Brighton 2-goal blitz right before the halftime with Jack Hinshelwood's bullet header and then an absolute world-class free kick from Danny Welbeck. Most of the second half was all Brighton, but it was Forest new signings of Jota Silva and Ramon Sosa who linked up to square the match in the 70th minute. Sosa's first goal for the club, and it's just his second appearance after signing from Talleres in the Argentinian top flight. But the top real talking point from this game happened with about 10 minutes to go. Morgan Gibbs-White chasing down João Pedro in space on a counter. He was sent off for a second yellow card for a tackle on João Pedro. He did win the ball, but then took out João Pedro with kind of like that classic scissor tackle that we talk about, where your second leg comes around and kind of sides the guy right at the kneecap. Initially, the referee called it a common foul, but then after deliberation, called it a yellow card, and then all hell broke loose. The manager at Brighton, Fabian Hursler, was sent off mostly for his initial reaction for it just being called a foul and him screaming, getting it in the fourth official's face. And then Nuno, after they decided to upgrade it to a yellow card and seeing one of his best players get sent off, he loses his mind. He gets sent off. So Gibbs-White, Nuno, and Hursler all shown a red card in this one. They all miss the next match for their respective teams. This one ended up in a draw. They're two of the only four. There's only four undefeated teams in the Prem. Both of these teams remain unbeaten, but I'll go quickly to you, James. What did you think about that yellow card call? Did you agree with it, or did you think it should have just been a foul?
I mean, the rule of a reckless or player endangerment tackle essentially was created for a tackle like this. And being someone who has been on a poor end, and we'll talk about it again, of a very poor second yellow card, I would say yellow card. I'd say this one is appropriate. You know, I feel for Morgan Gibbs-White because he's not a dirty player. He is a very good player. He's a skillful player. He works really hard. But you're already on a yellow card. Going into a tackle like that is something that you have to know not to do. Also for the fact that I believe the location of the tackle was almost right at the halfway point. You have so much room to catch up and a whole defensive line behind you that should hopefully be doing their job. It's just a risk that isn't warranted. Right. I think it's just something that you have to have spatial and field location awareness more for a tackle like that. And when you look at it, it really could have severely endangered João Pedro. You're very thankful and you know, hopeful that he doesn't have some type of secondary adverse effect about it. But it was a reckless tackle, and I would agree with a second yellow card here.
Kyle, what was your perspective on it? Did you agree with the call?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with James and the call. I think James hit it right on the head about reckless tackles, whether you get the ball or not, need to be stopped. So, I mean, Sean, you showed us the video this week of, Lisandro Martinez's challenge, the two-footed stomp. I mean, I don't care if Lisandro Martinez gets all ball and he's not within 12 inches of the guy. That's a challenge you are not allowed to goddamn make. You know, you could end a career. So it's dirty challenges. It's ball or no ball. Depending on the level, should be yellow or red. So, you know, where that one, I agree, definitely not a red card. But you know what? It's setting the principle early of, guys, we're protecting players. Let's stop this shit.
I mean, we've seen second yellows and straight reds given for far less, right? I mean, we always revert back to it was Curtis Jones, right? In Liverpool last season.
Yeah, against
Basuma. Yeah, he rolls over the ball. It was a good, clean tackle. But then the afterthought of it, not even remotely close to a scissor kick to someone's ankles, now making them two stub walking down the field kind of legs. But like this, I mean, we've seen it for a lot worse. And I don't think you have a leg to stand on if you're Morgan Gibbs-White. I think the only issue with how this happened was it wasn't called immediately as a yellow card, and that's why we saw it stem into something far worse.
Right, and I don't know if that's the fourth official telling the referee, hey, you made a mistake here or what. VAR cannot look at yellow card offenses, so once he makes that decision, it's final. That was a little peculiar, and I think, again, that's where our frustration stems from a lot of times with officials is the inconsistency and sort of like that gray area, and this is certainly one that falls into it. If he called it a yellow right away, I'm sure Forrest would still be pissed because they're a bunch of moaners, but you could understand it and respect the decision a little bit more. I think the controversy comes in there because there was probably a 45-second delay in between the two you know, the upgrade, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like I said, both these teams remain unbeaten, and that brings us to the second game, which, you know, is also the other two remaining unbeatens, Manchester City versus Arsenal. And hey, hand up, bad take by me on the pod last week. Really bad take by me on the pod last week. I said this game was going to stink to watch. It did not. This game was awesome. It was really, really fun. It was exciting. You know, it has the three things that Kyle always looks for in a game: heart, intensity, and passion. 9 yellow cards, a sending off, abundance of shithousery. I mean, it has everything you're looking for. And I think I'll let you, you know, throw it over to you guys to kind of talk and give us your thoughts on the game. But I just want to say the gauntlet was thrown down 3 seconds into the game when Havertz just truck-sticked Rodri like a primary Lewis. Like, it was, it just set the tone for the whole game. It's like, oh, this is going to be fun. But yeah, I'll throw it over to you guys. Kind of give us your perspectives each on kind of the whole mayhem of that 90 minutes.
All right, well, James, let me just go so that you can just go on your rant at the end. Take as much time as you need. I'll be 60 seconds. Guys, Haaland scored. Awesome. Haaland also threw a soccer ball at the back of Gabriel's head. Not awesome. That is going to be brought up. So keep your eyes
on. I would not be surprised if they just loop that in to 116 charges and then they just settle it all at once and say, Haaland, go play.
I'm 100% in for that one, James. Line it up. I mean, I've heard a lot of different takes on that exact scenario. I've heard some of my buddies say, hey, you know what? That's awesome. Shithousery to your rival in a big game. Got to do it. I've also heard 99% of people go, that is unacceptable. So yeah. I agree with the 99 there. It is a little bit unacceptable. I don't care who you are. You can't do that. I mean, when you throw a ball, soccer ball, basketball, football, it doesn't matter, at the back of someone's head when they're not looking, you could blind them. That's concussion level stuff. Like, you could get seriously hurt when you're not prepared for a strike like that to the back of the head. So
he does know his own strength because he's a fucking brute of a human being. Yeah. So
you know what, James, your negativity will come. All right. This is my segment now. So listen, I thought Gundo had a couple chances that he missed. I thought Bernardo Silva played well. I was hoping for a little bit better out of Bernardo. He's usually someone you can rely on heavily. So, you know, he's tricky. He's passing. The entire game took place in Arsenal's third when the second half started. So it was a masterclass, in my opinion, on Arsenal on how to keep composed in your back line. Thought Raya played out of his goddamn mind. That was insane to see. Even letting up 2 goals, he's the man of the match, in my opinion. There's no ifs, ands, buts about it. Where else can we go with this? John Stones, legend. We needed it. Terrible shot, firstly. Terrible. Terrible shot. Worst shot that probably we had all half, and it went in the net. So that was lucky. Yeah.
Don't have to be pretty sometimes, right?
That's it, man. You know, as far as Arsenal is concerned, I thought they played a great game. I thought it was very, very good away, especially at the Etihad. I thought that Arteta was hilarious during the red card. Deserved red card. 100% deserved. Can't be doing that. Cheating. Elbow to the back of the face. Tried to kill him. What can I say? But yeah, it was... Last topic I'm going to touch upon is Rodri. Rodri, unfortunately, did suffer a season-ending injury during the game. It was not malicious. It was not a harsh challenge. It was just unfortunate. Planted wrong. Sean's, you've said this a lot of times, injuries like that too tend to come from non-physical contact moments where you're just planting wrong, go for a header, come down wrong, something like that. So that will be a huge hit for Manchester City going forward. So you were without Rodri. You're still without De Bruyne right now. You're going to have to rely on your bench. So fortunately, they have a very deep bench, but how deep does it go? So this is what we're going to be seeing. We have Newcastle coming up this week. Historically, it's not going to be an easy game over the last 3 years, but they're not in the tip-top shape. So we'll see. This is going to be an interesting one. Rant done. James.
Well, real quick before we get off the topic of Rodri, and you know, this is, you know, I think a lot of people won't understand the magnitude of this, but obviously he's a Ballon d'Or nominee multiple years. He probably should receive it this year, being on such a heavily weighted team that has gone so far in multiple competitions over the past 2 years, that including of Spain, right? I mean, he is unbelievable. The man is literally the spine of the City defense. Correct. And can help get positioned. And anytime this guy finds an open space at the top of the 18, you're just hoping that the ball that came from one of the other amazing passers of Man City isn't put on a silver platter, because this guy can curl it in from on top of the box, no problem, which we've seen him do. We won the Champions League that way. It's just incredible. But the biggest thing that people got to remember here is that Man City lost four matches in a course of 9 games across all competitions that Rodri missed last season. He was absent from all 3 of their Premier League losses, one of them to Arsenal last season, Wolves, and Villa. So it's not like, obviously, he has to play again against Arsenal. But you see, when he went down and he got out, Arsenal capitalized 2 times. I can't remember if the first goal happened before the injury or after. I think both goals happened
after. It was right after he came off.
Yeah, it was both after. And you saw an immediate impact there. Obviously, Calafiori, world-class shot. I know, Sean, you are excited to see where this game goes in this league.
Shot in asterisks.
I think the way that he lined up for it, it looked pretty promising to be a shot. It reminds me of a goal 2 seasons ago that William Saliba, on his return to Arsenal's starting 11, he had a very similar one away in Bournemouth, which was a left side of the box curler into the opposition post. Left Ederson in this scenario completely hovering in space, which was great. You know, he's a very goalie. And then, of course, so on and so forth, the rest of the game happened. Right off the bat, Kyle, I will like to apologize, because right off the bat, I do think if we were to really look at this game, I think your scoreline of 3-1 should have been correct, because Gabriel should have had 2 header goals and we should have ended the game 3-1. You're 100% right.
How dare you?
Yep.
I mean, my goodness, James, hell of a take there. I mean, how much possession did you have in the second half? Like 7%?
I think if you put up a chart on 3 things, Manchester City possession, Arsenal possession, and James Tesfaro possession, 2 of those would have matched.
And you know one what, of Sean, them would have been Sean, higher. James is absolutely right. You know, if we were at the Emirates, if Man City went down a man, they probably would have been 3-1. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's just really unfortunate, right? Because I know you're tired of hearing my voice. Sean, I know you're tired of hearing my voice. Sean, I know you're tired of the situation. But here we are again, where, Sean, you apologize for your take saying that watching paint dry in your new home would have been more exciting than this. I just am tired of having to have the conversation of inconsistency on referees, because it took away from a very, very good game. And this game could have ended 4-3, 5-2. This had writing on the walls for being one of the most exciting games in the world. The way that Man City came out within the first 20 minutes, kept the pressure of Arsenal's back line, who does very well in the back, building out from the back, but keeping us to not even our final third, more like our final quarter. We were playing within our 18-yard box side to side of the pitch. It was extremely, extremely difficult pressure. And when Haaland scored the 9th minute, to be honest with you, I was at Mulligan's. I turned to Julie. I said, this is going to be an extremely excruciatingly long game. But the only benefit was that there was so much time, we had to go more out on an attacking forefront and still try to push forward and still try to score goals. What I'm happy that Martinelli, it's not a massive play development. He gets an assist. Any little thing for Martinelli is going to be huge into confidence. He was obviously utilized more than Saka. Saka was taken out at halftime, one because he had a small knock at the last game, and we know this was going to be more defensive minded. I think Martinelli's work rate is always through the roof. He might not have a good game. He might not be producing goals and assists like he does, but he does have a lot of work rate forward and back on the pitch. So he did a lot back there. Crazy stat for work rate is how hard Jorgen Timber and Havertz worked by both registering 0 successful passes in this match. Both of them played 89 minutes, first time in the history of the Premier League that a player, or let alone 2, has played a full 90 minutes essentially and did not register a pass. Obviously, that if the game was going the other way, that stat would never have happened. And if we had 11 men, we would have been more forward thinking. But it's really upsetting because, again, like I said, we're here talking about inconsistency with refereeing that led to another double yellow card for Arsenal again, with a second one supposedly. And Kyle, you mentioned the elbow to the back of the head. That's not even what he got the yellow card for. They're saying he got the yellow card for time wasting. Now, if you watch that video, it is halftime. So the first mistake Michael Oliver makes is not blowing the whistle after a header is cleared from the box after extension of time is clearly past the halfway point. The second mistake he makes is blowing the whistle for the foul, and then obviously immediately thinking that Trossard thinks that, one, this is a foul whistle, and he just boots it away to waste time. It is halftime, and you are taught, boot the ball the fuck out of your box or out of the area if it is halftime and the whistle's about to blow. The timing between the whistle and Trossard booting the ball away to secure a halftime whistle is minuscule. We've seen scenarios this whole entire season where a ball is 2 to 3 yards out of bounds and someone launches it back into the field. This happened this weekend as well. No yellow cards there. So it's just a frustrating take that a great game where Arsenal, first time in 2024, went down in a game and let up a goal and went down, that we come back, we tie it on a fantastic World Eva strike from our new signing, and then dominate our set piece again with Gabriel, who is the most leading defensive player from any goal since his entering of the league, and should have registered two. He should have registered two goals. He missed the first one that he was wide open again, Kyle Walker trying to defend him. And the second one, Kyle Walker is trying to play patty cake with his tits before he gets absolutely blown away. Absolutely blown away. If you haven't seen the video, Kyle Walker's literally trying to do like, oh, scoop, like you're scooping his freaking boob. It's unbelievable. And just blown out of the water. If you look at Gabriel's starting position and his launch position, it is incredible. It's like a fucking torpedo heading for its on target, and that's it. But it is wild. The last thing I'll say, and it was brought up multiple times already, of the inconsistently, we can call Michael Oliver specifically out on this because he officiated the exact match last season where Kovacic was already on a yellow card and decides to take out Martin Odegaard's ankles in one of the most egregious tackles from behind. Was that his second yellow card or the first yellow card? I think it was
the second one.
It would have been the second one. And the PGMOL comes out afterwards. And the head, right? Webb, right? It's Webb?
Howard Webb.
Howard Webb comes out and says, you know, you have to, and it's not verbatim, but it's pretty fucking loosely based. You know, when a referee is in a position where a player is already one yellow card, there's a lot of added pressure to provide a second on a situation like this. And what a lot of referees want to do is take that into consideration to not ruin a match and send a player off for a second yellow, if not warranted. Well, hello, sir. This is about as clear as day as you're going to get when you compare him apples to apples. What the fuck were you thinking in the first game? And what the fuck are you thinking now? It is just absurd, 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 and absurd what was going through Mike Oliver's head that day. And the last thing, and I've said last 1,000 times too, is the punishment doesn't match the crime, right? Especially at the end of the first half. You realize he's about to go on a second yellow card. Do you really think to yourself, say, yeah, this seems really fair? He was holding the one guy's hand, and I think it was Bernardo Silva or Savinho. I think Trossard got a yellow card against Savinho because Savinho was slightly ahead of him. Trossard does what everyone does, is he's trying to body him. He's grabbing him for defensive prowess. I think that's a warranted yellow card. I think that was really soft. So when you add that yellow card together with this yellow card, 1 + 1, again, does not equal 2 here, guys. This just can't be it. It's not how we can move forward. But I think I missed a lot of important stuff in my rant. So I'll send it back over to you, Sean, to see if there's anything of real depth and quality we need to cover other than my blood pressure again.
No, I think you covered it pretty well. You're relatively fair and composed, you know, compared to your manager and some other people immediately after the aftermath of that red card. So I just wanted to give Arsenal a lot of credit. I think, yeah, Arteta was furious and kind of deservedly so, but he was able to compose himself and his team was unbelievable in that second half. They battled their asses off for 53 minutes, keeping out Man City for the vast majority of it. Obviously, Kyle touched upon it. David Raya was exceptional in that second half.
Yep.
But I just wanted to talk about this one because this is a crazy stat. So Man City had 28 shots in the second half. It's the most shots in a single Premier League half since Manchester City against QPR in the famous Aguero game. So, but the other piece of that is that only John Stones equalizer had more than a 10% chance, according to XG, of going in at 18%. Yeah. So it just really speaks to how well Arsenal did defensively in kind of keeping them boxed out and preventing Man City from getting anything of quality. And even that chance, it was a short corner, ball came in, block shot, fell right to John Stones. And Raya almost saved that.
He almost I didn't even realize it.
Really. Yeah. I didn't even realize it in real time. There was a shot from the, like, I guess, behind the net cam, and Raya almost gets his, just sticks his foot up out of reflex and almost saves it. It was incredible. I would, like, if he made that save, it's the best save that's ever occurred in the Premier League by far when you factor in context, timing, all of it. Yeah. It was remarkable. I guess the two things I wanted to close on, James, for you, that game's got to feel disappointing, right? Because of how close you are to winning at the Etihad.
Yeah. I mean, you asked me last week what I would be happy with, and I said I'd be happy with a loss of 2-1 or 1-0. I said I'd be fine with that. And if you told me before the game I'll give you a point, I would have taken it. But to see how the game unfolded, it felt like a loss. It felt like a loss.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where if that goal, that exact situation happens and it's the 60th minute and you still hang on, you win 2-2, you're like pumped. But because it's the last kick of the game, essentially, it feels so much worse. It just like a punch to the gut, even though they play great. But the last thing for me is I don't know how Haaland escapes a booking in this game.
I don't know, man. After the goal, first of all, clearly should have been a booking. But after a whistle is blown, the game is still technically on. A referee can still issue cards until everyone leaves the pitch. And you could even do retroactive, you know, issuances after the game is completed. To me, Haaland, and maybe this is what Pep saw last season, saying, you know, he still has a lot to learn. Haaland, to me, at the end of this game, just clarified to everyone why he is becoming a villain. Everyone has to respect his quality and his outcome. But the way he presents himself, the way he holds himself, is that to no more of a fucking child that's just learned that he can stack three blocks high at preschool. Like, you're fucking ridiculous. You pick up a ball. You're playing, and supposedly, how many shots did he even register on this game? Like, one, and it went in. Great, great finish, by the way. A very quick load and release, right? Great finish there. Raya's not expecting a quick shot with his left foot without even any real power behind it. Just pokes it through. But to pick a ball up out of the back of the net against a team that is a man down, pick the ball up and throw it at the back of the head of Gabriel, who put in the game go-ahead goal against you guys, and then at the end of the match, go up to Mikel Arteta, who's got more experience in the league than you and your fucking father probably combined, to say, stay humble, stay modest. I forget what I say. It says stay humbled. Yeah, stay humbled. To Mikel Arteta, who worked underneath your current coach, who your current coach has praised, to do that, you're fucking psychotic. You're a loon. And Kyle, I would quit my current job, train for a year straight just to get into the octagon with Haaland for this. I would have to get a year of training.
He would kill you.
Fucking murder.
Give me a year.
Rip your head.
Give me a year of training. Murdered. Give me a year of training.
He would rip your head off of your shoulders. You could train for now until the rest of your life. He ripped you apart.
Conor McGregor.
Yeah, all right, listen. It sounds like James is going to be sending Michael Oliver a love letter in the mail any one of these days now. But listen, as far as the double yellows James ranted on for 20 minutes, I don't give a shit if you think that's the halftime whistle. You do not assume shit in the Premier League. Fuck that. I thought it was a halftime whistle.
He's going to clear it. He's going to clear it, and it's going to become halftime.
It's not going to become halftime. You don't know that.
It should have.
Do not make assumptions like that. That being said, Doku did worse than that earlier in the game. He literally
unwasted,
or was it later in the game?
This one is bullshit. It wasn't in the right position.
Arsenal Twitter conspiracy theory. That was actually just him putting the ball back for a free kick.
I didn't see that part. I literally saw it and was like, that's a fine no call. That's a fine no call in my opinion.
I mean, Arsenal fans could convince you that the JFK assassination was an inside job. Oh, wait, never mind.
But yeah, no, I mean, no, that's a red, period. No ifs, ands, or buts. I'm not going to say Michael Oliver is a great referee.
No.
You know, he really should have realized that would negatively impact Arsenal in a way. So you can't make any.
They came out and said about last year. They came out and said about last year.
What do you want to do? Cheat and lie and not get called? I don't want to hear that. That's bullshit. Fuck that. Haaland should have been punished 100%. He will be punished.
He's not going to get punished. They already came out. He's not going to get anything.
He should be suspended.
He should get at least a yellow retroactive.
He should get no. He should, we saw. Was it Morgan Gibbs? Was it Gibbs White or who was it last season? Again, I think it was against Liverpool.
Fine. Like in the NFL, where, you get a fine for excessive celebrations. You should get fined. You were celebrating and you lost composure.
To me, a push, because Morgan White did this to, I'm pretty sure, Liverpool last season, that created a red card situation for Liverpool, where on the sideline, the ball went out of bounds. Morgan Gibbs White is holding on to it. He tosses the ball away. A Liverpool player kind of two-hand pushes him, barely really that heavily of a push, and gets a red card and gets sent off of the game.
So at what point?
To me, this is a fucking the same exact thing. Whether you push a guy with two hands or throw an object against somebody on purpose with full intent to harm or hit that person is a red card.
Even a clean slide tackle? You're trying, if you might hit the guy, but that's a red card?
No. Come on now.
Yeah, come on now. Come on now. These are grown men.
We know nothing is going to happen.
Dude, in 2001, this wouldn't even have been called. Dude, the game is changed.
Right, but it's not 2001,
Kyle. People are getting soft.
Manchester City wasn't even in the Premier League, I think, in 2001.
Nemanja Vidic was playing with broken noses out there. You kidding? I botched that first name, didn't I?
It's close enough.
Roy Keane, one thing, Sean saying that the defensive ability of Arsenal is high praise. One, because Sean's current team, let me remind you all, is Liverpool, and they have let up one goal this entire season so far. Arsenal have let up three goals this entire season, two of which just came in the last one. But also, Roy Keane can eat a bag of dicks. He came out. I think Mika was talking to him, and Mika's praising Gabriel and Saliba for the defensive ability they've shown. And fucking Roy goddamn Keane, and you know he just plays the anti-hero on purpose, so you can't blame him too hard about it, but he could still eat a bag of dicks, is that he comes out and he says, well, he couldn't have defended that well. He let up two goals. So fuck you, Roy Keane. He's in fucking a 10-man side.
That was the worst Irish accent ever.
Roy Keane eating a bag of dicks while I'm doing the Irish accent. give me half a year and put me in the octagon with Roy Keane, and I think I'm good.
We might have to post a reel because I've just been grinning for the last 10 minutes listening to these two clowns go back and forth. But I think we can leave it here for now. We're gonna hop into rapid kick segment three. Yeah. Started off with with Aston Villa, who had their second straight comeback win, spurred on by Ollie Watkins and now the quintessential super sub John Duran.
Yep.
He scored three straight matches off the bench. I think he might be the definite. You look up super sub in the dictionary, it's just John Duran smashing in a banger. This guy is ferocious. He hits the ball like he just saw the ball hit his mother. Like it's insane.
Let me ask you a question about that.
Yeah,
because I've always been curious on this, because I had a little bit of a stint in my life in soccer when I played that I was so-called a super sub. Came in, impacted the game immediately, and I wasn't a consistent starter, but I came in and impacted the game. If you're like, and I'll even say for Leandro Trossard, right? Because that was him last season all throughout super sub. If you are providing results when you're coming into a game, let's say 60th minute, 70th minute, you personally, I know you're a professional. You're getting paid to do what you're doing and you're not playing a full 90, but you come in and you get a result and you get a goal. Are you okay with your super sub title and say, listen, I might not be starting right now, but this is my role on my team, because everyone's got a role on the team. Like for you guys, are you happy if you're John Duran, you're like, okay, I might not start, but I'm coming in, I'm making an impact. I know I'm the guy he's turning to right now.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, who's he gonna take out? He's not gonna take out Ollie Watkins, can he? Watkins was your best player last year. He had 19 goals and he was the top assister in the league. So I think John Duran's realistic about it. He's going to get his opportunities to start games. They're in the Champions League. There's those seven games. And we know once we get to December, there's a mix of Champions League games and then also, obviously, an uptick in Premier League games. He'll get his opportunities. But I just wanted to mention this. He's already on his way to becoming the player with the most winning goals off the bench. Seven players have the all-time record of five. He's got three this season. So
in five games,
right? And they're in tough games. They defend really well. I know you're really big on them, James. You think very highly, and probably I would say you probably have them as the favorite to finish in that in the top four. Mm-hmm. Obviously, mm-hmm. Arsenal and City are penciled in there, and then I would say Liverpool is probably a little bit ahead, at least at the moment right now. They look pretty strong. Yeah. But Villa, yeah, really, really impressive. Moving on to a team that's also in there in Manchester United. You want to take this one, James?
Yeah, so a great double save. So I think the feature here is the double save. Both goalies, really, in this game, top notch. We have unbelievable saves from both sides of the pitch, whether that came from Dean Henderson, which was the product of a Manchester United Youth Academy, or from Onana, who everyone forgets he was one of the best goalies in the Champions League two seasons ago when he played for Inter. He had a great double save. This happened to be a week for double saves, and Onana takes the cake for the second to last one here. But a very thrilling defensively 0-0 game there. Obviously, we highlighted the Butcher's double foot standing ovation tackle before, but really it's quite a disappointing game. If you're Manchester United, they're winless in the last four trips to Sellers Park and just have three wins in the last 10 matches against the Eagles. So they got a little bit of their number there, but 0-0 overall, not a bad result for Crystal Palace.
Yep. Moving up the city, we have Tottenham Brentford. Kyle, want to take that one?
Oh yeah. No, absolutely. A great game. Great game with a lot of great goals. The first goal, in my opinion, it was the best goal, came in the first 60 seconds of the game.
Again.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable strike from Mbeumo. It's a left foot volley, and the ball came in from all the way on the left side, never even touched the ground. Incredible. And he curled it on a volley into the top left corner. You don't get a cleaner strike than that unless you're Darwin Nunez this week. So that's as good as it comes.
Yeah.
For the second week in a row now, as James just said, that's their goal in the first minute. That's going to become their thing. So, guys, I mean, bet first goal, Brentford. Don't do that, actually. We have terrible betting advice on this podcast. But the Spurs did come back thanks to Solanke. He had a great goal and a couple assists from your boy Son. I mean, Son, he can do it all. Honestly, the assists were selfless. At least one of them was, in my opinion. He definitely, as a striker, had every right to take the shot, but it was a higher percentage shot for his boy, so he laid it off. You know, it's just, it's great to see. I think this team is someone to watch. I don't think they're at the part yet where they're a title contender, but I think with, you know, good fortune, if they can come out on top in the big games, if they can just nudge the win against teams like Chelsea, Villa, you know, mm-hmm. I would even say if they can just take a point off of the big three of Arsenal, City, or Liverpool right now, then they can fight. And I would not be surprised to see them in European football next year.
Yep. Currently sitting at 10th place, but 7 points, only 3 points behind Chelsea in fifth. So not a bad take.
James, I'll let you take this one because it concerns your boys.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that is a little bittersweet. I love to see the boys do well. This is Fulham 3, Newcastle 1. The Halen boys is what we'll call them. So Nelson and Smith Rowe lead the Cottagers an impressive upset victory over the Magpies in West London with their 3-1 win. Both of the boys bagging a set of goals there, or not set, but a goal each. Nelson had his first cameo in as Fulham, and he scored a late goal coming on wise. And then Emil Smith Rowe really finding his home here in another London team, which is great. Obviously, with Martin Odegaard, that definitely stings a little bit because it would be great to have him for the injury purposes. But really, really great to see Emil Smith Rowe showing up and doing very well. I saw a meme of the table, the Premier League table, the live standing, and Fulham currently in ninth place. They replaced Fulham's name with Arsenal Academy graduate 2016 as the team name. So that was fun to see, but great. You want to take Chelsea 3, West Ham 0, sticking with another London-based team?
Yeah, and a match in London as well. Nico Jackson scored a first-half brace and then set up Cole Palmer just after the Reds start to lead Chelsea to a very impressive road victory, their second in a row. And then I'll take this one as well. Kyle touched upon it before. Really impressive goal from Darwin Nunez. Just kind of sums up the classic Darwin Nunez experience when you're like, no. Yes. Oh my God. Yes. And then on top of that, Luis Diaz also scored a first half brace. His 5 goals make him the second top scorer this season. And the top scorer among human beings, because obviously aliens and balloons or whatever James just called Holland, puts him in a different category. And then Kyle, why don't you take the last point that we wanted to discuss?
Absolutely. Everton and Southampton each gained their first points of the season. 1-1 draw, which officially gives Everton more points than me in fantasy this year. Which I'm sure these two will dive into later on in the pod. I will not. So yeah, there you go. Congratulations, Everton. Congratulations, Southampton. Looks like you can get a point without your boy Smith Rowe. It's possible.
Yep. Yep. Good. Good. All right. Well, I think that cycles that segment and the rapid kicks to a nice conclusion. We're going to go ahead and take five. I'm going to lay down for 2 minutes, and then we'll come back and do the segment number four, which is the look ahead, and we'll talk about that Fantasy Premier League roundup and player to watch for, as Kyle mentioned before. So we'll be right back. All right, everybody. Well, welcome back. We have a couple really exciting games to look forward to. Hopefully, for Arsenal, at least, we get a nice little plateau of some of the bottom of the table teams here. But, you know, do you guys ever experience this, like, in your personal lives where you're doing 100 things at once and you're going, and then finally when you have, like, not anything to do, your body kind of is like, okay, I can relax now, and then you immediately catch a cold because your body's finally, like, settled and it catches up to you? This is kind of what I'm hoping isn't going to happen to Arsenal now that we have a little bit of a reprieve from difficult games. I hope we don't catch a little bit of a cold and run into some trouble here. But there are some other games which will cause difficulty with or without a cold. And the first one, Sean, why don't you go ahead and take away? And it's this weekend.
Yeah, it's the Chic Showdown. It's Manchester City v Newcastle at St. James's Park. The real question in this game is, how will City cope with life without Rodri? James talked about it before, how important he's been to them. And it's a good barometer for kind of what to expect from City for the rest of the season, because Newcastle started the season really well. We know St. James's Park will be rocking, but this is also a City team who's won 10 of their last 12 meetings against the Magpies. Newcastle did beat Man City last year in the Carabao Cup at St. James's. But Kyle, I just wanted to go to you. What sort of changes do you kind of expect to see in the lineup, you know, to make up for the loss of Rodri and then potentially KDB still being out in this one as well?
I personally hope that they play more offensive. You're clearly losing, as James put it well, the spine, and that starts at center defensive mid. So I think what you got to do is just play more offensive, and the best defense is a good offense. You know, our defense was not pressed against Arsenal in the second half, and that's not dogging Arsenal. I'm strictly just saying because the ball wasn't really on their side of the field. So, I mean, you're going into St. James's Park, like you said, and this is, I wouldn't say it's as hard as Goodison Park to walk into and win, but it's up there. This is a tough stadium, and even when they're getting relegated, I mean, 2016, they're a relegation team. That was still not the easiest place to walk into and win. So I think that tensions will be high. I think, you know, the mindsets will be very different coming off of a loss for Newcastle, 3-1 to Fulham, and then a very frustrating draw for City. I mean, to be on the offense for so long and net one, it's got to be frustrating. So I think it's going to be a... Love this. A lot of heart. I think there's going to be a lot of fouls. A lot of cards this game. But I do think that we need to start playing more offensively when we lose our center defensive mid. You don't replace a player like that, because you can't replace a player like that. You need to change everything. And it's got to start now, because it's going to be for the entire season. So you cannot just start, you know, you got to start testing stuff. Start tossing a couple players here, there. Maybe, you know, play the 4-2-4 attacking like in FIFA. Legendary lineup. But you got to make some changes happen, and that's how you got to start.
Fair. Fair.
Also, Isak will rise. That's a problem. He's due.
He is due. I agree with you there full-heartedly. He is due. Now, the next big question that we have is Brighton due for a win at Stamford Bridge? That is the Chelsea versus Brighton game on Saturday. It's 10 a.m. Not sure what we should call this rivalry now. It's either Graham Potter's time, Turner, poached or pottered. Brighton by the Chelsea, Chelsea versus the Chelsea B, or something else. Really creative, actually, terms there, Sean. So big hat off to you, sir. Really, really probably spent a total of 4 to 5 hours working on those specifically. At least I know I would have, but you're pretty quick with it. So I'm sure it took 2 minutes total. Anywho, Chelsea versus Brighton. Chelsea have pretty much had Brighton's name for the past couple of games when we talk about the Premier League. Last year, the May 15th game, Chelsea won 2-1. Then in December, Chelsea won 3-2. That was at home. And then we had an EFL Cup matchup in September. Chelsea won that 1-0. And then July 22nd, this was a club friendly, but also at Stamford Bridge, was a thrilling 4-3 over Brighton. And you have to go all the way back to April 15th, 2023, to get Brighton's first league win at Stamford Bridge. Now, the other side of this coin is that this season, Chelsea have played two games at Stamford Bridge, one loss and one draw. So they have yet seen a victory at Stamford Bridge. Brighton have not lost yet this season. So this is going to be a good game. They're separated by just 1 point on the table, and this could have eventual European ramifications by the end of the year. So I think this is going to be a very intense, very exciting game. You have Chelsea strikers, specifically Nicholas Jackson, now on a very good tear with 4 goals and 2 assists. And you have Danny Welbeck, an ex-Arsenal product, with 3 goals and 1 assist. So they're doing really well scoring goals and having the players who need to score goals do it. So it really will be an interesting game to watch. To me personally, I think Chelsea come out on top on this one just because they have more options of where the goals are going to come from. I do like Brighton's Adingra, Mitoma, Mita, and obviously Danny Welbeck. But I think that they kind of have been struggling this season to really hit on all cylinders regarding the scoring and being that really aggressive and be able to show that they have the right side of the pitch, left side of the pitch, and the center. We obviously know that Danny Welbeck had a great goal from a set piece this weekend, a good header. But Mitoma and Adingra, to me, haven't been as massive threats as I think they should be. But I think it will be a very, very interesting game and an exciting one for Saturday morning. But another one that we're going to watch out for is Manchester United versus Tottenham at Old Trafford. Sean, why don't you take us through that?
Yeah, absolutely. Two teams who have not started the season particularly well, Tottenham in 10th, United in 11th. But I think this is a game that could be a huge springboard for either side if they do come out with a victory. Something we can definitely count on in this game is high pressing and poor finishing. Tottenham have won the ball in the opponent's half more than any other team in the league at 8.4 times a game. United are 4th in that category at 5.6 times a game. And then from a big chances missed standpoint, United lead the way with 17 and Tottenham are 2nd with 13. These games last year were pretty good. The second one, this particular fixture at Old Trafford was a 2-2 draw. But Tottenham have just 2 wins in their last 10 matches against the Red Devils. I guess my question going in is whether or not we see Rasmus Højlund and Manuel Ugarte for the first time. I think Ugarte obviously needs to pick up some fitness, but Højlund, I think if he's fit and available, he should start. Xerxes hasn't exactly ripped up trees. They both came off the bench in United's draw against Palace. But Kyle, come to you. What's your prediction for this game? Who do you got as the winner?
It's got to be Tottenham. I think Tottenham wins this easily if they're at home. But I watched the form United was in this weekend. I watched the form Tottenham was in this weekend. I don't think there's an even level of play right now. I think Tottenham's on a different level. And you mentioned the managers might be under a little pressure. Tottenham in 10th, United in 11th. Ten Hag is not under pressure. I think he should be, but he's been in this state of, oh, fans want him gone. We don't see him moving. And he's always going to come to the interview at the end of the game and go, yeah, but I want a trophy. And that's going to be his defense again and again and again. And then the reporter is going to hit him with 100 reasons he sucks. And he's going to go, yeah, but that silverware looks nice on the mantle, huh? And you're just like, shut the fuck up. But yeah, I think Tottenham wins this 2-1. I don't see United even at home, even with their fans. It doesn't matter to me. They don't score more than one goal. They're terrible, at least in their current form. That's what I'll say.
All right. Pretty fair. Those are the games that we're highlighting, but obviously everywhere across the table, there are going to be situations where a game this weekend you won't want to check out. But something that you also want to check out, if you're in the league, definitely take a look at your final standings or your current standings, because we have 3 perfect teams remaining. Our current defending champ of Graham Hewitt's Toss My Salah. We have Abraham Tall's Mano You Didn't. And we have Paul Nicolo's Inter Le Fleur. So 3 teams remaining at the perfect mark. Sean was handed, I believe this week was your first loss. You're 4-1. Did you win this week?
And no, I won this week. I lost the previous one. Yep.
Lost the previous one. Sean shows it's just a hiccup and he's back to winning ways. He's 4-1. I picked up another win to be above 500, so I'm 3-2. And then Kyle, in absolute heartbreak fashion, loses by one total point. So the question rages on still. What will happen first? Kyle's first win or Everton's first win?
Now, let me check the
Everton
schedule.
They're on your heels, bro. They got that tie.
Hold on. Got to go to week five.
Okay. Brutal. Because I think the previous 2 weeks, too, you lost by 2 and 3 points. So you're not far off your first win here, Kyle, but you're not.
All right, Ryan Duran. It is so on. Oh, man. You've been scoring a lot of points. This is trouble. All right, listen. No problem. No problem. You are weak, guy. That's the team name. You're weak. In your face.
There you go. I love a little smack talk before the inevitable L. But us saying that probably means you're going to win this weekend. But maybe, Kyle, you can listen to a little bit of advice here, because this is kind of a two-parter for everybody. So my fantasy advice for this week is kind of what we said week number two, week number three. I think it was week number three, because Arsenal played Villa week number three. And the shining star that was Morgan Rodgers showed us what his worth is. Right now, his current value in fantasy is $5.1 million. He is a midfield player, which means he gets more points for goals and more points for assists. I think the assists are the same. But as a forward goes, you get less points for goals. Morgan Rodgers, I think a lot is going to be asked from him, specifically next week against Ipswich. We have John McGinn potentially out with an injury. So you're going to have more of an emphasis on Morgan Rodgers being a facilitator and try to provide some additional attacking prowess that John McGinn typically would. So if he's injured and he's out, I'm looking at Morgan Rodgers. But also, I'm looking at Morgan Rodgers as a perfect tier two fringe player where he can sit on your bench for the $5 million, but you can put him in on a game like against Ipswich. He also clears a way for your salary cap. So if you are like me or someone who does not have Haaland yet and needs to offload a couple million in order to replenish and put that into the bankroll for Haaland in, let's say, 1 week or 2 weeks, Morgan Rodgers is a perfect example. I have Diego Jota right now. He's at $7.2 million, I think. We're not sure. Sean's not sure if he's going to start, if he's going to be consistent on the next match or coming up. I'll bankroll the $2 million, pop in Rodgers against Ipswich, get the $2 million in the bank, and look to reinvest that elsewhere. So I think this is a good idea and a good area to look for the Fantasy League edge this week. Other than that, I think that concludes our episode. Sean, Kyle, anything to add?
No, that was pretty well done. Yeah. Yeah, we're done here. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think we're done here. I think I have to, knowing how many viewers and listeners we get, I might have to start making some public apologies to humans that are larger than me. I'll just say Roy Keane and Haaland.
But not Michael Oliver.
No, I don't think Michael Oliver is much bigger than me. But regardless, let's see how the EPL can give us our hearts and rip it out again in another week, another weekend. So until next Monday, we will talk and listen to you all then. So thank you very much.